You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Been wanting to talk to this guy for a long time at a time when journalism is needed and is hurting in a lot of ways. He is doing some really important journalism. Ronan Farrow is with us. And while I want to talk to him about the scope of his work, we'll do that at another time because he's got a lot of things to do. And right now we're here to talk about the specifics of the reporting he's doing on the Britney Spears case. This one has been fascinating, Ronan, for a lot of different reasons, including America swaying from one side to the other on how it feels about Britney after it feels like doing some of this to Britney. So Ronan joins us now, and thank you for doing so. But how did you get involved in the intricacies of this story? What were the things about this story that lured your curiosities?
Well, you know, Dan, I'm an attorney as well as a reporter. And for me, this institution of conservatorships and guardianships was fascinating. I grew up in a family with significantly disabled people. I have dear friends who are significantly disabled, probably a lot of people in this group on this call listening out there, either know someone who has been in a guardianship of one type or another, or has had a loved one that they've had to place in a guardianship. And, you know, it's an interesting legal system to explore, right? Because in many cases, it's important and welcome. If you have someone who is in a genuine state of incapacity, it's important to have a system in which we can allow loved ones to help them either through a hard time temporarily or long term. But then you have a population of people who test the outer limits of this question of to whom that restrictive structure should be applied. And Britney Spears is, you know, in addition to being a subject of fascination on a personal level, which we can get into, for the American public for years and years, also a test case for conservatorships and guardianships and the ways in which they can be abused. So for me, this was never, you know, just a sizzling entertainment story about a pop star or even something I also think is true of the story, namely it's a heartbreaking chronicle of a human being in a state of struggle. I think it's also something that's even more significant, which is it reveals a corner of the court system that can be underregulated and, yes, can lead to useful and helpful outcomes, but also can really get badly abused.
The limits on her freedom. Can you go through some of the details? Because when I'm hearing things like she can't have an IUD removed, I can't even begin to understand what world we're living in here.
Yeah, you know, she is a nearly 40-year-old woman. She has, over the course of this 13-year conservatorship, for at least the early years of it, performed and made tens of millions of dollars. The administrators of this conservatorship have, in many cases, profited richly off of this arrangement. We talk about how her court-appointed lawyer was making, in the neighborhood of $500,000 a year off of this situation. Her father and other members of her family who were involved either in maintaining or creating this conservatorship have also at various points been financially dependent on her. And then you have Britney Spears at the heart of all of this, and despite all of that, on a very, very limited weekly allowance that at times has been just, you know, a couple of thousand dollars when she was making tens of millions of dollars. She has, as you pointed out, alleged sort of Handmaid's Tale style limitations on her basic bodily autonomy and reproductive rights. You know, she has said that her lawyer, her court-appointed lawyer, Sang Ingham, did not inform her of her ability to file to get out of this situation. You know, and through all of this, there's a through line that emerges of her wanting to be a mom and see her kids. And even a lot of the early cases of evident public distress that led to her being placed in this situation were directly after she tried to see her kids in the midst of a custody dispute and was denied access to them. So, you know, far from the picture that emerged in the tabloids of, you know, a wacky pop star spinning out, you know, whether you could say that's also true or not, I think there is another dimension to this, which is this was a mother, possibly by the accounts of many people near her, in retrospect, seemed to be struggling with postpartum depression, was struggling with a difficult custody fight, you know, may have been depressed. There may have been many other mental health diagnoses at play here. But, you know, not someone who was just overindulging in the way the tabloids made out, and who as a result has paid a really dear price in terms of her basic freedoms.
You do such a great job, a deft job of slaloming through reported facts and also offering the nuance and perspective that's needed around these things that has some opinion in it as well. Reported opinion, exhaustively backed opinion. But in your view, what are the worst ways she has been wronged?
Well, I think it's telling that her own testimony has centered a lot on her father. You know, from the get-go, it's clearer now in the wake of the investigation my colleague Gia and I did than I think ever before that, yes, this is a complicated family and there were elements of sincere concern about Britney Spears' safety, but also there was a power grab here and a group of people who were financially dependent on her and were fearful of losing control. And so there was a struggle between one of the several people that Britney Spears led into her life that seemed to be a bad influence in the family's mind and that they were concerned would siphon off her fortune, and these family members. And they really, in the words of one person who was there at the time who I talked to, sprung a trap for her, where as she was spinning out and in this state of distress in early 2008, they were sort of waiting for the moment when they could then rush into court, actually while she was in the hospital on an involuntary psychological hold. This is all in this New Yorker article, you know, laid out as sort of an epic saga. They immediately, in a 10-minute hearing that didn't involve the asking of any questions or any fact-finding testimony, basically locked her up in a situation where her finances and her basic legal rights were ceded to her father. And I mentioned that in reply to this specific question, Dan, because, you know, we document instances where people recall her father screaming, you know, "I am Britney Spears," you know, where people recall him screaming in her face with kind of spittle flying, you know, you're a whore, you're a terrible mom. So you can imagine, of course, having an allegedly abusive, emotionally abusive relationship with your father like that would be difficult for anyone. But you can imagine then learning that that person is going to control every aspect of your life. You know, and right now he is no longer the conservator of her person. He's the conservator of her estate and her finances. But she has made very clear that that is still an incredible indignity and source of trauma. And actually in court yesterday, she said again something she's now said several times, which is she wants to see him charged with criminal conservatorship abuse.
Gia Tolentino and Ronan Farrow have done this reporting for The New Yorker. You should check it out. Britney Spears' Conservatorship Nightmare. It explains how we arrived here with this story over many decades.
Well, Ronan, for people who don't know in the audience, can you explain that? How did Britney arrive where she currently is?
Yeah, so it traces all the way back to this period of white-hot fame that Britney Spears experienced, where really she was, you know, a supernova, a phenomenon, and occupied a kind of complicated cultural role that I think was at times damaging for her mental health and would be for anyone's, both in the general sense that she was sort of viewed as fair game for paparazzi. We talked to Paris Hilton for this piece, and she's remembered, you know, getting chased and paparazzi smashing windows and it being, you know, terrifying in terms of physical safety, the extent to which they were mobbed. And then also Britney Spears was sort of a template onto which people projected a lot of stuff. You know, she was supposed to be virginal. She was supposed to be hypersexual. You know, there was the Catholic schoolgirl thing in the Oops, I Did It Again video, which was actually her idea to costume herself that way. So you get a sense as you sort of talk to people around her and dig into her biography that this is someone who is very savvy, a confident performer, you know, has her own ideas about how to perform and to present herself creatively, but also was sort of in the pincers of a whole lot of misogyny, where it became complicated to determine whether she was really in the driver's seat. And I think increasingly she became someone who, by the accounts of people who were close to her at that time, was really, really sheltered. You know, Paris had to teach her to use Google or even what Google was, and people who were there in the mid-2000s with her sort of speculated that she maybe hadn't been allowed access to computers in any meaningful way. And you can see how the combination of being sort of one of the most famous people on the planet and being besieged all the time, and having all these expectations thrust upon you, being sort of relentlessly objectified, could be toxic. And then you throw into the mix the fact that she then was in a custody dispute, you know, and that the centerpiece of her emotional life, by the accounts of just about everyone that we talked to, was her kids, and by her own account in many of her statements, and that she was sort of losing access to her kids, and letting people into her life as a counterbalance to a lot of control her parents were trying to exercise, who maybe didn't have her best interests at heart. You know, she was struggling with addiction by the accounts of some people around her. She descended into this low point around 2007, 2008, I think due to a confluence of those factors. And it came to a head in a series of fights between one of these individuals that she had kind of let in, who was starting to take a controlling role in her life, a sort of Svengali figure who was trying to manage her, and who the family thought was dangerous to her, and her father and mother. And there were some knockdown, drag-out encounters that are pretty crazy to recount and that are laid out in this piece. And it resulted in her being dragged off to the hospital involuntarily twice, and, you know, placed under, they're called 5150s, you know, these involuntary holds. And the second time around, the family, specifically her father, learned that this guy who was in this role in Britney's life, Sam Litvey, had been granted access to her hospital room, and the family had been denied access, and he hit the roof and had already been planning the possibility of a conservatorship, and said, we're going to get the conservatorship. And they, you know, went off to get corroborating testimony from a family friend who had been there for a lot of this, who, by the way, now tells me she regrets playing a role in supporting the creation of this institution. And they went into court the very next morning when Britney Spears was still essentially locked up in a hospital. And within minutes like that, you know, they had her completely disempowered legally. And then there was a long struggle by Britney Spears to get a lawyer to break out of this thing. And that's one of the most astonishing things to me in this story, Dan and Jonathan. You know, we found that she had gone to just about the greatest lengths anyone could go to get her own counsel, including arranging a meeting with a contact in a steam room in a hotel where she was handed a cell phone in a Ziploc baggie so she could try to call a lawyer. I mean, that is not the behavior of someone who is so incapacitated that they should have no legal rights, essentially. And yesterday we finally saw her get her own lawyer. So that's the culmination of years and years of her trying for that.
Ronan, have 1,000 questions, but hopefully we'll get another chance to do it with you. Very grateful for your reporting, for your work across the years here, because you have deserved the merit and the acclaim that your work gets. It's important work that you're doing. So thank you for making the time for us. Very much value it.
I so appreciate that. Thanks, both of you.
Thank you, Ronan. Thanks, everyone. Thank you.
Take care.